This is PFW in Progress.
Here's a nice piece of shit.
PFW in Progress.
Poop again! He got the shit.
This is the best night of my life.
With Red Kirsch.
Shut up!
Paul Perillo.
Where's my snack pack?
You've got a banana. You don't need no snack pack.
You know I like snack pack. Why can't you just give me a snack pack?
And Andy. And Andy?
Whoa. Part of the story I don't like is that the little boy gave up looking for Happy after an hour. That little boy's got a thing. You got a pet. You got a responsibility.
Andy Hart.
If your dog is lost, you don't look for an hour then call it quits. You get your ass out there and you find that dog.
Some guy named Tom.
I am the smartest man alive!
And you never know, Rory might stop by.
Oh, I want to touch the hymie.
PFW in Progress.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response, were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought? Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
You know, one of the things I was thinking about is, you know, what went on with the Raiders. You know, Raider fans still can't figure out why they traded Doug Gabriel. Especially with, you know, Porter in his situation. And, you know, we saw on the sideline Porter, there's questions about whether he was rooting against the Raiders, for crying out loud. But, you know, I'm wondering if,
you know, I love Doug.
The Raiders,
Doug's just
did
an awesome guy. So,
you know, this was a precursor to something that's coming down the road. You know, and, you know, would you be at all surprised if the Patriots were willing to give a one now for Porter?
I have another theory. The Raiders have no clue what they're doing from top to bottom. Now, here's the problem. I would not give the one for Porter because, A, he makes a lot of money, okay? B, he's never been as consistent in a receiver as he should have been because he was a defensive back in college, and he's got some skills, but he's still a little raw. You know, he's a good receiver, but I would rather go with the two number one picks because I think next year, with the young guys they drafted this season, having all that leverage next year with salary cap room, with all those draft picks, then you're in position to really make a splash. You know, hey, if you make the playoffs, you don't win the Super Bowl this year, you're not going to win it every year. But next year, I don't see any team that's going to be in as good a position to make a run than the Patriots are.
Okay. Let's see. Mike is from the Midwest. He says, I wasn't able to listen yesterday, and I'm sure you were bombarded with emails regarding Deion Branch. I've scanned many of the message boards, and my level of frustration is increasingly growing with each thread I read, and was hoping I could find some sanity with you guys, except from Fred, of course. What does that mean? I'm insane?
I would guess.
I usually admit that I'm as big a homer as they come with regards to the Patriots, but this Deion bashing has taken it to a whole new level. While I do not agree with how the situation was handled by Branch and his agent, I do not feel he was completely in the wrong. That is not what I have a problem with. I find it hilarious to see all these fans writing that Deion was not worth the number one pick, and he has never really put up very good numbers, and the team really won't suffer that he is gone. I think in the short term, losing Branch is huge. Troy Brown is our best wide receiver. That says it all right there. Sure, Caldwell can contribute, and we have Gabriel and Jackson on paper. They should help out, but remember, one guy has been in the system for a week, and the other has zero catches in the NFL, not just in the regular season, but ever. Add to the fact that he has been injured, and you have a team relying on two very big unknowns. Getting a first-round pick is great. It's more than what could be expected after seeing some of the other deals for arguably better receivers, but this is a win-now league, and that first-round pick does nothing for us this year. Brady lost his favorite receiver and the only real proven commodity we had at the position. I just wish people would stop dismissing all these facts just because the guy didn't necessarily do the Patriot thing and re-sign for less than he's worth. I say that because obviously for at least one team, he was worth more. This is not gloom and doom. This is reality. I still think the Patriots will win the division and have a chance to go deep in the playoffs, but let's be real. Brady is going to suffer. We cannot realistically expect any of the receivers to put up numbers that Branch put up last year, which now apparently is not very good because only because he doesn't play here anymore. Next year, we could have a very strong wide receiver
core. How long are we going here?
But that doesn't put me at ease for this year. Sorry for the rant, but I want to keep things in perspective.
I actually thought that was one of the best emails we ever got.
Well, it's well thought out.
Yeah, you know, it's...
That's why I read it.
It's I like fans who look at things both ways. Like, I don't see any reason to hate Adam Vinatieri because he's done so much for the organization. Now, when he comes here with the Colts, you boo the heck out of him. You know what I mean? Because he's now the enemy.
Thank God Paul's not here because you'd get into an argument about that.
But I'm just saying, he's now with another team, so he's playing. It's like Bill said with Mangini. We're going against each other now.
Right.
So, you know, if you want to boo Vinatieri, that's what fans do. Fine. But to physically hate the man when he did so much for your organization, that baffles me.
Yeah.
Like Deion Branch, okay, things didn't turn out the way you want it, but he didn't TO it. You know, he didn't try to bring the team down with him.
Right.
He did never, not once, did he go on TV.
Yeah, he wasn't in his driveway doing
right.
Push, you know, sit-ups or anything like that. Yeah.
So if you want to say, you know what...
The one time he did go on TV, he said, I think things will work out.
Right.
You know?
So if you want to say, you know what, I don't mind that Deion's gone, fine. But to hate the guy, I just don't see where that comes from.
Yeah. Well, that's what we do. You know, that's how we do it.
I guess I don't...
Speaking of booing, were you at all surprised that... during the game on Sunday against the Bills, at one point, the Patriots' offense just could not do a thing. It's like they were stuck in mud, and they got booed coming off the field.
Now, I was at first I thought they were booing because they were running the clock out.
Okay.
Like, that's what I thought.
That could be.
I thought they were like, well, why don't you try to
take
do something
a shot at
here?
It.
That's usually what the end of the half booing is, I think.
Yeah.
So I thought it was more of that than – I don't think – people are booing Tom Brady.
Yeah.
I think they're like, you know, well, hey, we still got some time here. But in Belichick's defense, he made the right move because Brady was about to go out in a body bag and they needed to make some adjustments, which they did at halftime.
Right.
So just at that point, you just want to get in as quick as you can and say, let's forget this and, you know, move forward. So I think the booing was more of they were frustrated and they wanted to see something happen.
Right. But, you know, there was one point in the game where I think I looked at you and I said, I think it was third and long. Patriots were on defense. And, not a peep.
Not a peep.
I mean, and I looked at you and I said, can you believe this?
And,
you know?
And I've been here now for over a year. And I don't want to hear any crap about the open stadium and blah, blah, blah. Listen, you go to different places in the country and it's just different. I don't know why. I mean... Maybe a lot of the rabid Patriot fans that we interact with don't have season tickets. Maybe they're home watching the games on their couch yelling and screaming.
Absolutely. You think of the Redskins, okay? Now, what team has spent more money and had worse results over the last few years than Dan Snyder's Redskins? You know, so if there's any team there, the fans should be, you know, hey, let's get going. It should be Washington, yet... They're into it.
I was watching the game.
This is crazy.
I had the exact same thoughts. Watching the game Monday night, I was like, this place is going nuts.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's never like that here unless it's a huge game.
Right.
Like, if the Colts come in and...
And with the money they spend, you know, I know it's a salary cap, but the types of people they bring in, you know, if I was a fan, I'd have much higher expectations than what they're doing.
It seems like the fans here get deflated very easily in a game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if it's 17-7 Buffalo... It doesn't mean the game's over. That's when they need you the most.
Right.
You know, that's when they need the crowd into it. They need a false start penalty. They need things like that to happen. That's when you got to get up and yell. That's where the fans. That's where they earn their money. You know what I mean? Get up and go nuts.
It's
I'll tell you what, Fred. I was walking. Me and Andy went to show me his seats because I got them for a friend of mine for the Miami game. And as we're walking back, there's a line about 6 miles long. And I said, "What in the heck is that?" And he said, "It's people waiting to get in." And I said,
"Geez, I gotta take a leak so bad I can taste it."
And I said, "The game starts in like 5 minutes. You know, how about this? How about you drink when you're at home, and like for an hour in the parking lot instead of just shotgun a couple of beers and get in here? I mean, you have to drink 3 cases of beer before you come in here.
I
think half the place is drunk, and
and then by the second half they're asleep."
I agree. I think that's what's happening.
Josh in Jacksonville, thank you for being on now most of the week. Just one question. With Deion gone, I was thinking, what would happen with future wide receivers in New England? Do you think that once the organization drafts or trades for a wide receiver and we mold them into our system and they become at the peak of their careers, or so they think, we will offload them because the Patriots have made the worth of that player greater and they won't pay them now? For every 3 or 4 years, we will be switching wide receivers. Who will Brady feel comfortable with? Don't you think that the Patriots have to think about him?
Well, I think if Chad Jackson, or like if they drafted a Calvin Johnson, if they became like a Randy Moss type of player, I think the Patriots would pay him, don't you?
I do.
I mean, if they had Randy Moss without the attitude, I don't think they'd say, well, we don't pay the position, so, you know, go make your money somewhere else. If they had that kind of game-changing player at the position, let's be honest. I mean, we get on the Patriots a little bit for, you know, not spending money at the position, but the guys they let go, David Patton, David Givens, even Branch, they're not superstars.
Right.
They're good players.
So, I mean, you just got, I mean, right now, you just got to say, well, you know, if they, again, if they feel that he's worth the money, they'll sign him.
And
you know?
It's like I've been saying all along, and I made a bet with Andy about it. David Givens went to Tennessee. He's still the number two receiver. I think Drew Bennett's the number one receiver there.
Absolutely.
And so they're paying him number one money to be the second receiver.
On the phone, we have Jamie from Houston.
There he is. How you doing?
What's up, fellas? We're back in football season. It's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. How's the weather down in Houston today?
It's not bad. It's 88, mostly sunny.
Okay. This is a big week for your Texans, Jamie, because they're playing the Colts, and according to the Texans, they don't need Reggie Bush because they got Mario Williams to defend Peyton Manning, so I'm expecting the Texans to win big this week, right?
Yeah, whatever they're saying. I also hear they're planning to start like 5 rookies, too.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, that's a winning formula. Yeah, somehow not impressed with Kubiak yet, but he's better than what they had. But, yeah, they'll be interesting. You know, if they don't get run out of the place, you know, I'll just be happy with that. You know,
okay.
It's good to have a, you know, I'm happy to have a football team in town, and,
that's
you know,
true.
That's the thing.
Yep.
But just a couple quick questions. do you think we, and I personally think we dodged a bullet last week with Buffalo, had Tekeo Spikes and I forget that other secondary guy just get injured. You know, I think we could have ended up with an L on the record book there. And then, and part of that, do you think New England looked past, I'm guilty of it, I'll admit, I looked past Buffalo, and I think maybe the team did. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
Well, they came out flat. Brady admitted it.
Well, yeah.
Brady said we came out flat. I don't think they looked past them. I just think for some reason they weren't the Patriots in the first half for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, they did bounce back after that bad play and score right away, but then after that it was,
and
know.
I think that play took a kind of, it was just so shocking.
Yeah,
I mean,
I looked,
I was typing something, I looked up, the ball was on the ground, and they're scoring a touchdown. I think the whole press box was just silent.
Well,
nobody
know,
could believe it.
I don't know if it's looking past them, but there could have been a level of complacency,
mm-hmm.
you know, in that, you know, the Bills are got J.P. Losman, and we've got
right.
his number, but you know, I was saying that these guys are making. I still think that the Bills have a pretty good defense. You know,
yeah,
now they lost
got a real good defense.
Yeah,
they can be dangerous.
Paul disagrees. He thinks they were because of the numbers last year when they had given up the season. You know, they just did terribly. But they had Tekeo Spikes back, and he immediately made a difference. And then they lost him after that first series. But I think that if he was in that game, I think the Patriots might have lost that game.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what I think. I mean, that's what I said. And I think we dodged the bullet, and hopefully we learn, and we'll be fired up, and, you know, we'll take it to New York and New York.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think the Jets are going to be a pushover, though.
No, it's going to be,
no.
I mean, they're division rivals. All those
yeah.
division games are tough.
Absolutely.
And you know what, Jamie, I think people kind of forget that the Jets had a season last year where they were down to their fourth team quarterback, things kind of unraveled at the end, but we're talking about a team 2 years ago that was a field goal away from making the AFC championship game, and they got a pretty good defense themselves, so the Patriots have to be on top of their game if they want to walk out of there with a victory.
Yeah, I agree. You know, at least they don't have Ty Law with them this year anyway, so
that's true.
That helps too. And then Tom, I wanted to give you some props for dealing with the email there, the guy whining about, all I do is save lives and, you know, I make money. You know, I think you need a raise, Tom, for dealing with emailers who have no lives and want to whine.
Oh, thanks.
What happened? I wasn't on the show yesterday.
Well, some guy told me to F off and said that he used to like me.
We do that every day.
But he doesn't like me anymore because I was saying you can't compare people like us who make $30,000 to the millionaires and just say, well, it's only $1 million.
Well,
what's the difference?
Tom's level
and the guy said,
pretty,
I save lives for a living. And I said, well, you know what? My wife, she teaches for a living, and I'm making more money than her. Now, is that right? No. I'm sitting here talking about football. But I didn't make the rules.
Right.
That's just life. If the guy's saving lives, I think he should be making $1 million a year. But I don't get the, you know.
Yeah.
It's not that's my life.
That's life.
That's life. That's the way it goes. And then one other quick comment on the emailer, the Kansas guy that was talking about, you know, we don't have anybody else but Dion. I mean, you know, I think he failed to mention Graham. And again, I think, you know, there's some comments out there that he's overrated, but Graham's no slouch, not Graham, I'm sorry, Watson. Watson's no slouch. You know, we had Falk splitting out wide, catch a nice pass, stretching out. I mean, we've got lots of weapons and, you know, Brady's going to be hurt by this. Well, you know, we've also got two guys called, Maroney and Dillon back there that's going to help him out a lot. And, if they just play everything smart, so
yeah, I mean,
there's some other pieces to keep in mind there.
Are the Patriots going to be the Colts? No, they're a different team.
Right.
You know, so, okay, thanks for the call, Jamie.
Take care, guys. Go Pats.
Take care.
Jamie picks up the phone.
Yep.
He answers the call.
Yep.
All right, webradio@patriots.com.
Hi,
is the email address.
Desk of Ken Flanders at Gillette Stadium.
Ken's still not at his desk.
Nope.
Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Justin in Alaska writes in. He says, great comeback on Sunday. Remember the defense only allowed 10 points in that game. Granted, Jackson and Gabriel are needed on the offense, but I was pleased with the D last week. Well, I was too. You know, McGahee ran well, but
he needed
you
got to
temper your enthusiasm by the fact that J.P. Losman was the quarterback.
Hmm. Yeah, this,
you know, if we thought he stunk going in the game, we can't think he was really good after the
right.
Patriots did well against
him. In my opinion, and it's just my opinion, I know Pennington played good last week and everything like that. Our season starts in Cincinnati. I want to see what this defense does against a scoring machine like that.
That's the
because
first big test.
If they get whooped by Cincinnati, how good are you going to feel about the Colts coming in here? You know what
right.
I mean? Like,
right.
So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle it. And, you know, if they give up 24, 27 points to them, I think that's a pretty good deal. But if they're giving up 40, like
right.
they did to the Colts last year, then we might be in trouble again.
Right. Second point by Justin. Good call by Belichick using the tested short yard running of Corey over the untested yet pretty good game-winning foot of Gostkowski on that fourth down. Gutsy but good gamble.
No, that was a great call. Yeah, that's what you do there.
Funny how when a player is, this is a third point, when a player is traded or leaves due to free agency, the fair weather Pats fans come out in droves. Oh no, we'll be 3-13 this year without Branch, or Belichick is horrible and Tom Brady's going to leave us. This is the worst day since Andy Hart came back to PFW.
that I agree with.
He's just kidding. please, this is the NFL. This isn't the mob. Branch isn't turning state's evidence against us. Players come, players go. The brain trust looks at what we have money-wise, who we have player-wise, who we can get, who isn't worth it, who we can get rid of, who can we trade for, and they make the best decisions they can to improve the team. By doing this, Belichick and Pioli have won 3 Super Bowls in the last 5 seasons. Finally, well, he goes on to talk about... this is the worst day since Andy Hart came back to PFW. let's see. Dion was a fast 5'9 receiver, has been injured, can't beat the double team, but he's good. He wasn't Randy Moss. He wasn't T.O. He wasn't even Hines Ward. Never caught more than 5 TDs a year. He's never went over 1,000 yards.
But I'm not Bill Belichick. I'm not Bill Parcells.
Would I like him on my team this year? Sure.
I'm on Bertie.
But is he worth $36 million? No way. The end is not here, Spazies. Spazzes, I think he means.
Oh.
Calm down. Okay. So that's basically what he has to say. He says, I love my Pats. I don't care who's playing for them. Do I want the best players? Yes. I trust Belichick and Pioli to deliver. One day they'll be gone. But until then, they have my trust. Let us not forget 36, 38, 39 people. Those just aren't the number of times Paul corrects Fred on air in a week or how many times Tom does his duty after the Gridiron Grillers, they are Super Bowls.
Yes, but those are also Super Bowls from the past.
I go in, I pull that lever down, and I say, there, I've done my duty.
I understand that they've won 3 Super Bowls, and you have to respect that, but we're talking about now and the future. And I hope that those...
Well, again, if it worked back then, why are we... It's the same program.
I'm just saying, if they lose 3 games in a row, I'm wondering if those same kind of emails will be coming in.
Yeah, I'm sure people will freak out and the sky's falling, you know.
But let's suppose they go 8-8.
Eight and eight.
And, you know, the Dolphins win the division or the Jets or whoever.
what kind of reaction is that going to cause fans and you, and like what will happen?
The criticism will be that it caught up with them and they just didn't prepare themselves for this year. They had all that money.
And Ron Borges will be at every press conference.
Yeah, they didn't use that money to retool and so on and so forth.
All right. I'm just wondering.
You know, and Belichick won't care one lick because he knows that you can't control everything. It's a tough place to win football, you know, to win games in the NFL. And, you know, they'll probably go and turn around and win the Super Bowl next year. You know? So that's the great thing about having a coach like Belichick. He doesn't give a damn. He's not going to bow to external pressures.
It's so ridiculous.
And we were praising him for that. And now all of a sudden, it's terrible.
What are you looking for?
All right. Let's see. Doug in Halifax in Nova Scotia. He says he listens to the podcasts up there.
Mm-hmm.
See? I told you.
They're big.
I just wanted to comment on the fact that immediately after the game last Sunday, I had a bad feeling about the season. I was left with the feeling that the Pats played an all-around bad game. However, on Monday, I watched the second half again. The first half was awful, not worth a review. Upon watching the second half again, I was surprised at how the Patriots actually looked pretty good. They drove the ball up the field three times quite effectively, eating a lot of clock along the way. Brady, with the exception of the one pick, looked like he was really starting to get on a roll. They also made key defensive stops when they needed to. After watching the game for a second time, I actually have some renewed hope for the season. Now that the whole branch thing is behind us, I really feel that if the team can concentrate and rely on the positive aspects, there is still a chance at making a long run this year. Quick thoughts from the game. Thought the running was incredible. Maroney has a burst of speed that was exciting, and Dillon was running like a bull. Ben Watson is going to be one of the keys to the Pats' success this year. I think he has the talent to be a superstar and make us forget about Branch. Finally, I thought that Tully Vanacking looked pretty good. He could make some contributions.
See, now I got to disagree a little bit about the second half. Because if you remember, Fred, the Bills had the ball to begin the third quarter. And I turned to you and I said, what the hell is this? They're going down the field like butter. And then one play changed the game. I mean, let's not forget, the Patriots came out in the third quarter, looked worse than they did in the first half.
Yeah.
The Bills were moving at will on them. And if they had made it 24-7, as big of a Tom Brady fan as I am, you could have put it in the barn, baby, like Bill says, put the hay in the barn. It was all over. And they made the stop. Then they still had a 3rd and 10 where Brady showed why he's Brady, threw the perfect pass to Watson, and then that changed the entire the entire game. But still, that Dante Whitner interception, there was a penalty on it, but for some reason the refs called him out of bounds,
which was absolutely
ridiculous. Yeah. But that could have changed the momentum too. So, while I don't think the season is over, I wouldn't say that the second half was a great half of football by the Patriots, and I don't think they would either.
Let's see. Neil writes in, now the Branch saga is long over. Do you think the Patriots will use the reported first-round pick from the Seahawks to entice another team deep with receiving talent into a trade? In my opinion, it would be wise to bring a wide receiver in now rather than wait for the 2007 draft, as it is now that we need someone for Brady to throw to. Trading for a player would give Belichick more options to at least compete. This season, we struggled to move the ball through the air against the Bills, and I honestly think the better teams we face soon will be better able to focus their efforts on shutting down our offense totally. You know, before I finish this email, I looked at Brady's problems in the first half. More protection than
guys not getting open
or dropping the ball.
He was getting killed.
So I'm not sure about the wide receiving yet. You know, obviously, Bam Childress is not the guy you want out there, but the problem wasn't guys dropping it or not getting open. We don't know because Brady didn't have a chance.
Yeah, right.
He had two or three balls tipped in the line of scrimmage. He got sacked two or three times. You know,
three sacks, four tips in the first half.
Yeah, so it's hard to really, you know, give a steady evaluation of what the receivers are off of that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Also, this is going back to Neil's email. If we wait until 2007, although we would own the draft board, we would be drafting rookies who would in turn take time to adjust to the Pats system and wouldn't likely contribute until maybe 2008. Can you think of any team that would likely do a deal with the Pats for a receiver, and if so, who could we recruit? Here's hoping Bill and Scott can perform yet another miracle. And thanks for your efforts with the podcast. Your shows have been getting better and better and funnier each week. Please keep up the excellent work and hopefully see you in November for the Bears game.
Well, and that's the problem with the email is who are you going to trade a first-round pick for? I mean, the Colts aren't giving up Reggie Wayne. You know, the Cardinals aren't giving up Anquan Boldin. So basically, you're looking at the Raiders with their mess would be the only team. And, I mean, I just feel that they just made a deal with the Raiders. Weren't they talking about these other players in those negotiations?
Well, you know, I know that you chalk that up to just the Raiders don't know what they're doing, that the fact that they traded Doug Gabriel. I you might be right, but I got a feeling there's something else brewing over there. That was just, look, if you give us Gabriel now, we'll give you five, but we'll do something else with you later that will make up for it.
All right. Well, we'll have to see.
Okay. Bob in Shenzhen, China says, this question is for all of you, especially Tom. Seems the Pats are trying to stockpile picks for next year's draft. Is next year's draft going to be a strong one? Also, could the team still make Branch pay his fines? I say do it. Is this the same agent that okayed his rookie contract? Yes, it is the same agent on his rookie contract. They are going after the fines. And then we'll talk. Tom will talk about the draft.
Well, the draft, I always think I love the draft. But I think right now it's just way too early to start projecting blah, blah, blah here, blah, blah, blah there. What I like to do is I'll watch games and I'll write names of players that really catch my eye. And then I'll start looking towards them in the offseason as we go head towards the draft, start looking into them more and things like that. You know, it's hard to say. You really don't know if a draft is strong until 3 years after it. I think there's going to be, at the wide receiver position, I think there's going to be some skill there. I think there's going to be some linebackers coming out. I've already seen a few of them that I like. So there's always going to be players at any position. It's all about maneuvering, getting where you need to be. You know, like say that the Patriots loved Bobby Carpenter this year. They loved him. They had to have him. They would know that they would probably have to get above the Cowboys, who might have interest in them as well. So that's when you're talking about the draft. It's all about maneuvering and getting the players you want. And that's how, you know, the Patriots sat there, took Maroney. Who wanted Maroney? The Colts. Now, think about this. Think about that offense with Lawrence Maroney. I mean, they're trying to tell me Joseph Addai is some kind of first-round draft pick. Imagine if the Colts knew what they were doing when ahead of the Patriots took Maroney, put him with Manning and those receivers. Good night. That's all I can tell you.
All right. JC from Anaheim. He says he listened to the show yesterday. Paul, Andy, Tom, you outdid yourselves covering Branch management and your evaluation of the team in general and of specific players was the best I've ever heard. The one item I might bring to light. Is when Tom mentioned that certain players around the league say they don't want to come to the Patriots because they're too cheap.
Fred. See, now that. I didn't say that. I posed the question, is it going to be a problem in the future? I just posed it so we could discuss it. I didn't say that.
Okay. He says, I can understand certain star players saying this because it is true in most cases, but if you went around the league and talked to the Jarvis Greens and Russ Hochsteins that every team carries, their opinion would be the complete opposite, but they don't get the media attention. Andy. And this is going to Andy. I think your evaluation of Matt Light, right on. And Tom, likewise, with yours on Daniel Graham. Having said this, what would you say if the team, assuming at least one of our receivers is equal to or better than David Givens, bundled some players, for instance, Copen and Neal to Arizona for a number one? We could even throw in a fourth-round pick with those two guys. We can trade Graham and Asante Samuel to another team for a number one. Again, we can add a middle or a low-round draft pick to achieve this end. From all I've heard, their opinion of themselves is higher than what the front office probably thinks. And in Neal's case, he wants to play in the West Coast.
Who's going to play?
Yeah, I don't know.
If you trade all those guys away for the strategy.
What he's saying is we would fill Copen and Neal's spots with a combination of Hochstein, Kazier, and Murchowski. And in the case of Graham and Samuels, they would be replacing by elevating Dave Thomas and Garrett Mills into second and third position, and Eugene Wilson would move down to take Samuel's spot, or Gay with Wilson playing the nickel, leaving Sanders to begin his career next to Harrison.
Well, it's irrelevant. The season has started. Those kind of trades will never happen. like the two guy for that. That's all done now. Teams are all set. That just won't happen.
What do you think? Theo Epstein's running this team?
Yeah, it's just it's not baseball. Like something like that might happen in baseball, but football just doesn't happen.
All right, I need to take a breath, Gary. Let's take a break. We'll get back to your emails
nice
after this.
Feather in the cap to have an opportunity to win a Super Bowl and to be a part of that. I've been on a couple of playoff teams that had good opportunities and we didn't get it done. But
Bank of America would like to take a moment to let you hear what our home equity line of credit sounds like. You see, if you want to remodel the kitchen,
it smells great, hon.
Or renovate the bathroom.
Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my darling.
Or fix up anything around the house, Bank of America's home equity line of credit is the easy, low-cost way to make it all happen. There's no paperwork to bring, so applying is simple. And you'll have access to your money just about everywhere, by phone, online, and at our banking centers nationwide. All of which makes putting that pool in the backyard a little less of a dream and a little more of a reality. So whether you want to have the pros handle it or do it yourself, a Bank of America home equity line of credit is your ticket. Apply today. Just visit bankofamerica.com, call 1-800-900-9000, or stop by your neighborhood banking center.
Clementine.
Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Bank of America. Higher standards. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
The New England Patriots won an amazing 3 Super Bowl championships in 4 years. We live these defining moments in Patriots history with a limited edition print featuring action photos and images of the 3 championship banners that now hang at Gillette Stadium. And if you think that's good,
it is good.
How about having it signed by perennial Pro Bowler Richard Seymour?
It's going to be shot, Richard Seymour.
This autographed print exclusively from the New England Patriots is perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on the Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points card and free 3 championship banner print signed by Richard Seymour. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autograph print limited to the first 300 with qualifying purchase. Visit PatriotsExtraPoints.com for details.
Pepsi Smash!
Pepsi Smash gets you closer to your favorite artists every day. Together with Yahoo Music, Pepsi Smash is online in a big way at PepsiSmash.com. It's unexpected, it's personal, and it's all made possible by Pepsi.
Hey, what's up? It's Ben from Breaking Benjamin. Check out our latest single, The Diary of Jane. That was The Diary of Jane from our latest record, Phobia. To find other hot performances and go behind the scenes with your favorite artists, log on to PepsiSmash.com. It's what's happening in music.
Pepsi Smash. It's music in a way you won't find anywhere else. Get behind the cameras. See exclusive performances and features like a day in the life, interviews, headlines, and contests. Log on to be a part of the Pepsi Smash and Yahoo Music experience. PepsiSmash.com. It's what's happening in music.
Pepsi Smash!
This is PFW in progress.
All right, listen up. I don't like white people. I hate rednecks. Your people are rednecks. That means I'm enjoying this.
PFW in progress with Red Kirsch.
Now get this. We ain't partners. We ain't brothers and we ain't friends. I'm putting you down and keeping you down, and you're going to be sorry you ever met me.
I'm already sorry.
Paul Perillo.
I'm taking a moan in my stomach or something, bro. I gotta go get some.
We eat when I say we eat.
You know, that's bullshit. That's the last straw, right? I want some food now. If you don't like it, you take me back to the penitentiary and kiss my hungry ass goodbye, right? You took me out here. You've been treating me like shit since we first left. And I want some food in a nice place, a nice atmosphere.
And Andy. And Andy.
Hey, I feel like for money. You don't have to say about it. That's not
Andy Hart.
I want the rest of you cowboys to know something. There's a new sheriff in town. His name is
some guy named Tom.
Now be cool. Shut up.
PFW in progress.
Jack, tell me a story.
You.
Oh, that's one of my favorites.
The way this team was playing at the end of the year, I thought we had a legitimate chance.
Still up at the podium. Hey, did you see his debut on ESPN? How did he do?
Sucks.
Yeah? Had nothing to say?
I thought he was terrible.
All right. Well, back here in PFW in Progress, I hope we're not terrible. Paul, Tom and Fred here will be here until 2 o'clock, and then John Rook and Patriots Playbook will be right after us. Email address is webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. Ethan has an interesting question. He says, either it was last week or the week before, Paul mentioned something about the radio show being the only place that you guys were allowed to express your honest opinions. Does that mean that the work on the website and in the pages of PFW has a preconceived slant to it? Is it written somewhere that if you make your negative opinions known on a more widespread audience, that your job will be in trouble?
Well,
first of
go
all,
ahead, Fred.
First of all, this is the most widespread audience. But anyway, he says also, is this now filtering into the radio program, given last week you were specifically instructed to talk up the new meat products? Actually, Ethan, no one told us to talk up the new meat products. I just did that on our own. So, and plus, anyone that gives us free food, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, and plus we work for the team, yeah. And it's...
But to getting, in all honesty, you know, we tend to be a little bit more candid on the radio show, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, because you say it and it goes away, unless Gary, you know,
really
hits the record button.
Some ass
in the... but as far as the opinion, how we phrase it on the radio show is a little bit more, you know, I don't know how you would say it, rough, mm-hmm. raw. But when it comes to, you know, what these guys write on the website or in the paper, I think it's their opinion, right? You guys don't compromise your opinion.
No, but it's mostly news.
Yeah, it's news.
I think fans have a hard time differentiating between, like, a column and opinion and news. Most of the stuff on the website, other than Ask PFW, it's all news. And in the paper, there's the commentary, and then it's basically news and the game review and the game recap. So we're really not given our opinion that much in those types of things. It's just we're reporting on the team. I don't think we're being overly positive, or I mean, I do the matchup winners, like who won the matchups, and I do the matchup previews. And if I think the other team is better in a certain area, I give that matchup to the other team. It's just when you're playing the Bills and the Jets, they probably won't get a lot of matchups. When you play the Colts and the Bengals, the Patriots are going to lose. You know, that's just the way it is. So I don't think in the paper and the website we really give our opinions much.
Right.
It's an Ask PFW, and God knows we get enough criticism from that from fans, so we must be giving our opinions in that.
Right. So I don't think you have to worry about it. What you read is what people think, or it's just straight news, and, you know, we try to just present the news in an objective manner.
Yeah, I mean...
Here's the news. This, you know...
I don't think we're going to write an Ask PFW, we think Bill Belichick should be fired.
Right.
That probably is not going to make it in, but... You know, other than that, we
yeah,
give our opinion.
Sure.
I think you should be fired. I just use that as an example.
Alex writes in, am I missing something here? Just one game into the season, which, by the way, was a win, and the fans are booing, and listeners ask how deep the upcoming draft is. Just to put a little perspective, I want to know, how did you report the opening day loss at Buffalo back in 2003? I didn't get to hear you back then. All I can remember the Malloy situation
that's
and they hate their coach story. I also remember that the 2003 offense was not that good, that the running game was poor, and that the defense had to carry the load that year, like the games against the Browns, Dolphins, and Cowboys. Since the offense lacks playmaking ability at the receiver positions, do you think this year's defense can step up and become, once again, the backbone of the team?
Well, I mentioned yesterday, I think with this team right now, fans have to expect a lot more 19-17 kind of wins than 45-0 kind of wins. If you look at that game, and Paul and Andy always make fun of me for saying this, but the difference was they made the stop on fourth down, and then Tom Brady's perfect throw to Watson. In Miami last year, it's tied 16-16. Brady, two perfect throws in a row, touchdown Patriots, 23-16. When you have Brady in close games, I think you're going to win more times than you lose. When you have Belichick drawing up the schemes in close games, I think you're going to win more times than you lose. So I think the fans just need to understand that early on in the season right now, I think they're going to eke out closer victories than, you know,
yeah, sure.
55-0 wins.
Yeah, those guys get paid, too, on the other side.
Yeah.
So Stan says, since the Denver loss, Patriots fans have evolved into two groups, glass half empty, glass half full. I think the half-empty fans may be newer fans that don't have an appreciation for what the Pats have accomplished under Kraft, Belichick, and Pioli. The glass half full has more history and a more even perspective. Thankfully, I'm in the latter group. We have faith in management, knowing they won't be right 100% of the time, but they will have our unwavering support.
So but you can be in the glass half full and still question things that happen. See, if you're in the glass half full and you just say, in Bill we trust, to me that doesn't cut the mustard. If you're in the glass half full and say, I support management, I root for our players, but I don't understand why we didn't re-sign David Givens because I think that would have been a good move. That's not being negative. That's just saying, I think this is something we should have done. That's
well,
okay.
You know, but the thing, you know, one thing, fans are hypocritical sometimes, though, because, you know, I when Ty Law left, people said, oh, you know, they should have let him go. We can't pay him that money. You know, and they said the same thing about Branch. Oh, he's not worth number one or Reggie Wayne money. But then when he's gone, it's like, oh, how can they let these guys go? You know.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you can, just because you're a fan of the team doesn't mean you can't question anything.
No, of course not. That's what, you know, why bother watching if you
right. There, he's right. There are people who over-exaggerate every move, but if you're a fan of the team and you've been rooting for him for 30, 40 years, you have a right
to basically have a little courage. Have a little courage.
Yeah.
You know?
Just don't follow the sheep one way or the other.
Right. Jeff is from Hawaii, says, I was a little antagonistic yesterday, so I apologize. I was aiming my anger mostly at ESPN and others who don't seem to get the hard realities of the business of NFL football. I wasn't attacking Paul or Tom, despite how it seemed.
Is that the guy that told me to F off?
I don't know. Thanks for ripping into me anyways, though, Tom. Just kidding. Personally, I think Tom adds a lot to the show, and yes, I do listen more than once a month.
Oh, thank you.
Let's move on from yesterday's Branch Fest, though, and discuss something that got slightly overlooked. Ellis Hobbs. Did he play as well as it seemed like he played? Did Coach actually individually seek him out for an attaboy after the game? Nothing like a future shutdown corner to put a hop in your step.
See, now we're on the same page again, because I meant to bring this up at the beginning of the show. I was going to say, one of the things that no one's been talking about is the phenomenal job Ellis Hobbs did on Lee Evans. Now, Hobbs usually takes one side of the field, but in this game, Belichick had him shadow Evans for the entire game. He held him to two catches for 25 yards.
Yeah.
And Lee Evans is the type of guy, if he played here or in Indianapolis, would be huge. He's their big play, you know, big receiver, and Hobbs totally took him out of the game, and that was a huge aspect of that football game. Ellis Hobbs had a tremendous, tremendous game, and hopefully he's on his way to the Pro Bowl like I predicted he would be. And this week, when just asked a little while ago if he was going to do the same thing to Lavernius Coles, he said, I'm not letting that information out of the bag just yet. So.
Well, I think he played all right, too. I don't have an evaluation yet because it was J.P. Losman.
Yeah,
and
right.
If I think he stunk going into the game, I'm not going to say
he give up any big plays that changed the course of the game, and that was what he was supposed to do.
You know, the thing I don't know in my head is if Evans had been open, would Losman have been able to find him?
Now, you know? Coles and Pennington present a little bit more of a challenge, so we'll see this
week. What happens. Karen is from Scituate, Rhode Island. She said she heard Chris Collinsworth and Shannon Sharp call the Patriots arrogant because of the way they dealt with Deion Branch. They said, who do the Patriots think they are, losing their number one receiver and replace him with anybody? Are they arrogant or just not afraid to make cold, hard football decisions? I'm sure Bill Belichick gets these arrogant descriptions because of his way of dealing with the media. As much as Bill can be so maddening when dealing with the press, I give him all the credit in the world for making the really hard decisions when they need to be made. And Karen, you're absolutely right. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, and the other thing is the national media just reacts.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Paul said, how can you follow every single football team and know what's going on? You really can't. So you hear what happens, you read the local, they're probably reading the local newspaper.
Right.
And then they're just making a reaction based on it. So that's probably their opinion as former players, you know, how can they do this, blah, blah, blah. But my guess is they really don't know the whole situation.
These guys are all about ratings.
Yeah.
And, you would think, well, why should Tom Jackson or Chris Collinsworth care about ratings? Let me tell you something. From the day you start working for the networks, it's pounded into your head that it's all about ratings.
That's it.
And
that
you better
it.
Get ratings or you're going to be in trouble. And to get ratings, you got to get viewers. And to get viewers, you come out with these sensational comments. And so that next week, oh, what's he going to say next? You know, and that's what it's all about. So they can't just sit there and be monotone, give you just the facts, man. They got
to
make outrageous statements.
Right. And,
it's entertainment.
And Fred, other than me, who's the most the two most hated guys in the Boston media?
It's
Ron Borges and Felger right now. People just can't stand those two. Yet, it seems that people are still reading, still listening.
Borges is on every show can be on, and Felger's got like 15 things
going
on.
You know why? Because as much as you hate them, you got to hear
what they
say.
Yes.
Yeah, what are they going to say?
Right.
And that's what drives up ratings.
Right. So don't take it that hard, although I love to play the whole, get riled up. Mm-hmm. Craig in Ithaca says, the sky is falling. We all know that defense doesn't win championships. Quality wideouts do. Who are the teams with the best high first-round pick wideouts? Easy. It's the Detroit Lions and Arizona Cardinals. The sooner that we start following the blueprint of those two teams, the better. Meanwhile, we have to suffer with most of our number one picks on the D-line and free agents. What have guys like Colvin done for us lately? That's a very good tongue-in-cheek email.
And from someone from Ithaca, a place I've gotten drunk many a nights when my friend
played
football there.
My wife went to Ithaca College.
One of the best places in the entire earth. I love Ithaca. That's a good email from a guy in a great, great town.
Well, Roosevelt Coleman is a guy who
is really coming on.
I mean, look at the last preseason game.
Not only that, last year at the end of the season, that Buffalo game on Sunday night, he kind of made that play and started coming on.
He's really coming on.
There's a couple guys the Patriots have, that Wilfork, Colvin, who are starting to turn that corner and really making a difference.
Yeah.
And that defense could be a lot better than people thought it was going to be.
Mike in Florida, after watching the Buffalo game again, here are my observations. For all the bashing you guys have done of McGinnis, he puts Banner Kane to shame. Banner did little.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Okay.
Now, we never compared Tully Banta Kane to Willie McGinnis. So let's stop right there. Whatever we said about McGinnis is in the whole picture. He might be overrated for what he was. We never said that Tully Banta Kane is better than Willie McGinnis. So let's get that straight right now.
Okay, Banner did little in the run game, and his pass rushes were all the same. Outside speed rush, no counter moves inside. 99% of the time, he ran himself way out of the play. Not what we are looking for.
This guy got the coach's film?
Not what we're looking for. Also, it appeared that Buffalo knew what route the receivers were running beforehand. I wonder if McDaniel's offense is easy to read. Do you guys have access to coaches' tapes or just TV tapes?
He does.
Yeah, do you watch the games again looking at the performance of individual players? No, we don't have access to the coaches' tapes.
Deion Branch not expected to play Sunday versus Cardinals.
Well, that's...
I'm just saying it just came up on the wire there. No, and listen, you're talking to somebody who's probably watched over 7 million football games, college and pro, on TV, and the things you are saying, I don't know where fans get this stuff from, but you just can't get it when you're watching games on TV that the receivers couldn't get open, they were jumping routes. You just don't see that kind of stuff from watching the game on TV. You just don't. And that's the reason why they have coaches film. If you could do that, they would just tape the game on TV and watch that. They shoot it from overview so they can get a better look at it. And as far as Tully Banta Kane, I thought he had a slow first half. I thought he made some progress in the second half, putting some pressure on the quarterback. And, let's be honest, we got to give him some credit. He was involved in the play of the game when he forced Lawsman to go inside right into Ty Warren. Warren gets the sack, but Banta Kane made the play.
Right. Jay from Hanson says, it's fantastic to have you back 4 days a week. Good luck to Deion. I don't agree with how he or his reps handled the negotiations, but he was a very good Patriot and ended up making the right decision financially for him and his family. People have to relax about two things I hear a lot about. One, the wide receiver situation. Everyone chill. I'm not thrilled with who was on the field last week, but we have two potential impact receivers in Gabriel and Jackson. Let's hold off on the panic until we see what Gabriel and Jackson have to offer. Two, the salary cap. Why are people so worried about the amount of money the Pats are under the salary cap? I don't care if the Pats spend 15 cents or $150 million. The management has secured the players they feel can play for what they're willing to pay, then I'm fine with it. Spending all the money doesn't mean you're a championship lock. I couldn't tell you what they spent on their three championship team salaries, nor do I care. Although I think the Dion departure does have an impact on the locker room. I don't think it carries the same impact as Malloy because Branch has not been around the team since the minicamps in May, so it's almost like he had already been eliminated from the team.
Yeah, but the players didn't feel that way. I think the players thought he was coming back the whole time. I mean, and this isn't my opinion.
Well, I know I was there yesterday or Monday when Seymour was there, and, you know, he felt, mm-hmm. you know, legitimately bad about it, and Vrabel was a little less. Vrabel had more.
I think it takes more to get to Vrabel.
Yeah, you know, he was just more of, you know, look, this is what it is, and we'll move on. But, Tom, it was nothing compared to what, I mean, when Malloy left, I'm telling you, I thought it was it. That was it.
Right, and now do you.
Because it was really messed up.
Do you think it wasn't just because he was there longer, but now that was before Bill had won anything.
Right.
And so he was coming from Cleveland where he hadn't, you know, had a huge success. Now that he's won three Super Bowls, maybe players say more, well, you know, hey, these guys know what they're doing.
Well, yeah, I think, again, I've learned my lesson. But, you know, the whole Malloy thing is, you know, it wasn't like a buildup of a holdout and all this stuff.
It just happened.
He was on the roster, and a few days before the first game, they cut him.
Yeah, I remember seeing it on ESPN. I was just like, what the heck? I mean, it came out of nowhere.
Yeah, so, I mean, that really shocked everybody. I think a lot of the guys, you know, they like Branch, and he's their teammate. And, you know, they don't have to be like Belichick and say, look, I'm just thinking ahead. They can come out and express their feelings.
Yeah, and I don't think the fans should. I heard a couple of fans getting on Seymour, telling him to shut up and count his money. Hey, you know what? Seymour is not only one of the best defensive players in football, he's a leader on this team. And if he wants to say something, he can say it.
Right.
You don't have to slam him for it. Right. He just said how he felt, and now he'll get on, play football, and try to win a championship. Not everybody has to keep their mouth shut every single day of the week around here.
Right.
Let somebody say something every now and again.
Saeed in Los Angeles says, the New England crew here in L.A. appreciate your hard work and informative work. Your hard, informative work. Question. At what point does a contract signed by a player become enforceable? In all this, Branch violated his contract, and with the other 2002 wide receiver class, it seems that they basically ignored the contract that they signed without a gun to their head. Will this become the norm if a player doesn't like his contract? Just hold out. Like many people have pointed that out about Branch violating his own contract, yet the Patriots were the one being sued for violating a contract. Well, I mean...
You know more about this than I do. I don't really understand it all.
Branch isn't the first guy that's held out. You have to have a certain amount of courage about yourself and confidence about yourself to do that type of holdout. You know, because if you're not that good a player and you hold out, you know, other teams will, you know, look poorly on that. But, you know, he is subject to at least $500,000 worth of fine, and I think the Patriots are going after more.
Which he'll gladly pay, I'm sure, with his new contract.
So, you know, he was being fined for every day that he wasn't showing up to work. And so in that sense, there is a penalty for not honoring your contract. But, you know, players feel that that's their only way out is to hold out because, you know, a team can...
And here's something I brought up yesterday, which I'm sure I'll get accused of believing, even though I'm just bringing it up as a question again. Now, I want to get your opinion on this. Because the Patriots do what's best for the organization, which meant they got a first-round pick for Branch because he was going to sit out 10 games, does this set a bad precedent because agents will tell players in the future, listen, Belichick doesn't care. He'll just trade you away for a first-round. Because Branch doesn't care that the Patriots got a – I mean, he doesn't care what they get. You know what I mean? So do you think in the future that'll make agents say to their players, you know what, Belichick, he's not going to put up with this. He's just going to trade you anyway, so hold out. Do you think that could become a problem?
It could, but again, I think, you know, a player has to be pretty confident in their own abilities to hold out, take that hit, and then hope to get the next, you know, now, remember, the Patriots didn't have to, you know.
Oh, no, they didn't have to do anything. Right.
You know, and there's a lot of players that another team won't give up a first-round pick. So you got to be pretty confident that the team that you're currently on is going to be satisfied with the trade offer.
And
you know, the second thing is the Patriots could have made him hold out, sat him for the six games remaining after he comes back week 10, and then franchised him next
year.
Now a team has to give you two first-round picks.
Right.
You know, so
and for all the slamming that the Patriots – I mean, there are some guys on this team that make money. I mean, Vrabel,
right.
Colvin. It's not like they pieced together, you know, a bunch of has-beens
well,
and never will be.
I'll bet you, you look at the Colts' salary, and it's tough because you never really know exactly
right,
how
much.
But if you look at the Colts' salary structure and put it up against the Patriots, I'm sure guys on the top end are making more
yes.
money. But I'll bet you the middle class on the Patriots, it's much stronger. Is much stronger than the Colts.
Yes,
and I'll bet you the lower
Colts,
class is stronger on the Colts than it is in
the
Patriots.
The Colts have a huge drop-off from starters to reserves.
Yeah.
A huge drop-off.
And that middle class is what helps the Patriots year after year. Hey, John in Palm Bay is on the phone. Palm Bay? Is that right?
Yep, Palm Bay, Florida.
Palm Bay, Florida.
How's
How
it going,
doing?
John?
Good. Hey, I just wanted to say I listen to you guys every weekend, and I couldn't agree more about the average fan complaining about Deion Branch wanting more Maya. I mean, I make average wages, and I'd like more money, too, but I'm never going to make as much as a pro football player. But also, I'd like to say that next year when we got two number one picks, there's no way we're going to pick a wide receiver with that because Bill Belichick knows the history of wide receivers in the draft, and we will pick a linebacker and probably a cornerback, a shutdown cornerback.
Yeah, I would agree. I think they'll probably go defense, but... You know,
sometimes special players come about. And
yeah.
If that counts,
yeah, I mean,
John,
I like the guy.
I mean, call John. If Reggie Bush was available, would the Patriots
right.
pick him?
Reggie Bush is a 1 in a million time
right.
lifetime player.
Right.
He comes once in a million years. You got to pick him. If
you got to remember though, they did trade up in the second round, which was almost a kind of a first round pick to get Chad Jackson because they really like
yeah.
him. See, I think the Patriots. I think they like certain players, no matter what the position are, and if they feel that they're there for the value that they feel that you know that they deserve, that they'll go after them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not only that, you know, two first round picks. Now you can trade it to a team for an established receiver as well. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a receiver in the draft. They could go out and get a veteran receiver with one of those picks now.
Yeah, I think they might do that in free agency, but I definitely see them picking a cornerback and linebacker. And then Chad Jackson and Doug Gabriel will be superstars with Tom Brady.
Yeah, well, they're definitely going to – I mean, if they don't address the linebacker position next year, I'll just fall off my chair because I will just have no idea what their plan is. Because at some point you figure they're going to go out and bring in a couple of linebackers. My guess, it's next year.
Yeah, I've seen a guy from Ohio State, and Penn State, and he looks like a Belichick type of guy.
Yeah, Paul Zlowski, I can never say his name.
Yeah, Gobolski.
Yeah, there's some good linebackers coming out, some good athletic linebackers, inside linebackers,
like
too.
Like Samarczyk?
Yeah, there's also a guy from Notre Dame that I think they might pick up.
Listen, you know
my... Tom, I'm just kidding, Tom, because he doesn't like him. I think he's good.
I think he's good, Fred, but I have friends that went to Notre Dame, and I just... You know white receivers from Notre Dame, they fall in love with him. If Samarge is good, he's good. I can't take anything away from him. I just can't stand hearing about him.
Okay.
That safety from Notre Dame, though, he can come play here anytime he wants.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys' show. And is there any way you guys can update of who practices and who does during the week? I know the Patriots are very secretive about that, but I haven't heard of Chad Jackson's practice at all this
well,
week.
Well, what happens now, John, the new rule, it happened a couple of years ago, but the injury report that comes out, which we post both for the Patriots and the team that they're going to play, if a player did not practice, it'll say it on the injury report. So look for the injury reports, which come out Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. It'll come out around today around 4:30, 5 o'clock. So every day, the injury report, if a guy didn't practice, it'll be on the injury report.
Okay, thank you, and God bless you all.
Okay, John, thanks for the call. John in Palm Bay, Florida. Hey, a couple phone calls today.
Yeah, we were big.
That's nice. Ron in Tennessee, though I'm sorry
God
to
bless
see,
you.
Yeah, though I'm sorry to see Branch leave, I don't see it as a reason to panic. All Patriots fans will remember that this team won a Super Bowl with David Patton, Troy Brown, Charles Johnson, and Freddie Boom Boom Coleman at wideout. I see our main problem at wide receiver not as a personnel problem, but as a health problem. None of us in Patriot Nation would be worried if Gabriel and Jackson were on the field along with Caldwell and Brown. And
yeah.
And they were playing well. I'll throw that in.
Right. And just one thing, though, and Fred, I think you might even agree with this. That 2001 Patriots team is probably the least talented Super Bowl winning team of all time.
A lot of things had to happen exactly right for that team.
And one of them was being Mike Martz coaching the Rams, who had way more talent
right.
than the Patriots
and
did.
Just a stubborn coach on the other side. David Patton going unconscious in Buffalo and hitting the ball out of bounds to rule the play dead. you know, a lot of people have things happen. You know, there's no way you can say the Patriots were a dominant team destined to win the Super Bowl that year. But once they did that, they parlayed that in
right.
to getting even
but
better.
I wouldn't go back to the 2001 team because I think that was a unique team that did a lot of things that, you know, most teams, it's just not going to happen for most teams.
Yeah.
So that's probably not a good criteria to use. But we need to see Jackson and Gabriel in this offense. We need to see if they can contribute. And that's just the only problem I have with those two is if they don't pick up enough of the offense and they just become deep threats, because the Patriots need more than that. They need the guy to go over the middle 12 yards on a slant. You know what I mean? That's what they need. And for Ben Watson to be effective, some of these receivers got to step up or teams are just going to try to take him out of the game. Because take the Broncos, for instance. When they play the Chargers, they don't worry about the receivers. They put Champ Bailey one-on-one on Antonio Gates. And if the receivers here aren't playing well, they'll do the same thing to Watson.
Right. Charles Alexander is at the St. James Francis School, and he's in Baltimore. But he says, you know, speaking of Jackson, he says, you guys saw him at camp, a mini camp at least. When healthy, is he potentially the man?
I think so. I mean, physically, my opinion really was hindered when I saw him at that kickoff gala. And apparently others saw what I saw, because he has not said a word since that night. And I said yesterday, Fred, on the show, some people were saying, well, I don't care what he does there. I care what he does on the field. That's Mr. Kraft's charity event, which he called the single most important thing outside of football that this team does.
Right.
So to show up there and act like an idiot, that is a big deal.
Yeah.
And so once I see him on the field and I can get that image out of my head, I'll be more on his bandwagon. But physically, this guy looks like the real deal. He's big, he's strong, he's muscular. I can't wait to see him out there, because if he can get that injury behind him and get in, learn the offense, and contribute, I think he could be a special player.
Well, I know coming out of those mini camps and going into training camp, everybody I talked to on this team said that they really thought that he was the real deal and he would be the number two receiver. Now, this is before Deion Branch. He would be the number two receiver, because that was, remember the talk? Who's going to be number two?
Right.
It's not going to be who's number one.
Right.
Back then it was who's going to be the
Caldwell
number two. Is it going to be Caldwell or Jackson? And a lot of people thought that it would be a game or two before we all realized that it was Chad Jackson. Something happened, though, between then and now. And I'm not sure it was just the hamstring.
I'm not sure either.
I got a feeling it had to do with learning the playbook or doing what was supposed to do at meetings. But, you know, and I have no inside knowledge about this, but for as high as they were about this guy.
Exactly.
And as Belichick said earlier after the combine, how he was smart as far as football went, something happened between that, and I don't think it was just the hammy.
I agree with you. So there definitely something happened.
So let's hope that, like you said, he goes out there and erases all those doubts.
Right, and for the people who like are just blowing off the kickoff gala thing, Teddy Bruschi, Richard Seymour, and Rodney Harrison weren't blowing it off because they didn't look none too happy. And those are three guys that Patriot fans really respect. So to say, well, it's not a big deal. It's a big deal to Kraft, and it was a big deal to those three who had looks on their face like, I'm going to knock this guy out. So my guess is one, two, or all three of those guys had a talk with Chad Jackson after that, and possibly Bill Belichick as well.
Good. Joe Labby in China Village, Maine. I'm getting a good chuckle listening to all of the so-called NFL experts today. Seems unanimous that the Branch trade will be the proverbial back-breaking straw for the Patriots dynasty. Give me a break. I understand the collective memory of the average fan is about two beer commercials in length. I have higher expectations of national football personalities. The Patriots have been great the last five-plus years because they overcome adversity better than most teams. In past years, the Patriots have lost Drew Bledsoe, Lawyer Malloy, Ty Law, and all the others to injury or to free agency. The loss of Deion Branch is just the beginning of the molding process of this team's personality. Would you agree?
In my opinion, the dynasty isn't over until number 12 doesn't suit up. I say you get 8 wins a year as long as he's your quarterback. Then you just got to find a way to win 2, 3, 4 more games to get in the playoffs. That's how I see it.
Yeah.
You're never going to go 5-11 if Tom Brady's your quarterback. Can't happen, because it'll be just like the Buffalo game. He'll make a couple of plays at the end where it's the deciding factor, even if they're playing bad. So there's no way that team is ever going to win 5 or 6 games as long as he's on the field with decent talent around him.
Doug from France, I've been reading mixed reviews on how Junior Seau did on Sunday. Most were not great, and yet he was given a game ball. What's up? You should pass on the fantastic news for fans who live outside of the U.S. You can now watch the Patriots live on the Internet with a product from the NFL.com and Yahoo Sports called NFL Game Pass.
Oh, okay.
So for all our international listeners who always want to watch the games, check that out on NFL.com. And I think it's, you know, they have some way of figuring out if you're coming in from overseas, and if you can, you can have access to this thing. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But what about Junior Seau?
Hey, I got to be honest with you. I'm not a huge Seau fan, never have been, but I thought he played well. I thought he filled the lanes well. I didn't see him getting blocked 10 yards down the field like Monty Beisel and Chad Brown did last year. You know, he was in the backfield a couple of times. He made some diving tackles on McGahee, which would have allowed bigger runs if he had broken them. So I have to say B-plus first game for Seau.
Okay. Let's see. Got a lot of emails here. Russell from the OC, I guess that means Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the branch fiasco is done, with all the cap cash the Pats have, who of their free agents do they sign? What defensive free agents will be out there? And do you think they might try for, and will the free agents, both their own and the others, want to come here knowing the money system the Patriots employ?
Well, like I said, the one name I know of is Lance Briggs. This is the kind of stuff I kind of, you know, we kind of do in the off season. It's the regular season now. We're kind of focused on this year. So we're really not too involved with who's, because we don't know who's going to be available yet. Guys get re-signed all the time by their own teams. But when you talk about their own free agents, I believe Daniel Graham is gone, because I think, like we said yesterday on this show when you weren't here, a team's going to look at Graham and say, they're misusing him in New England. We can use him more as a receiver, give him too much money. So I think he'll go. I think there's more likelihood of Copen and Samuel re-signing and staying with the team and Graham leaving. Samuel, I think he's got a good chance of coming back.
I think they'll sign him.
I think they like the Samuel Hobbs, you know, young corners. I mean, I know Samuel's been around for a little while, but they're not old corners. They're a good tandem. Mm-hmm. And if Hobbs elevates his game, you know, up to that point, then you got Samuel. He's a good number two guy. You got Wilson coming in at number three, or Gay. That's not bad.
Well, Chris from Worthington, Mass., he says, in the Bills game, on that big fourth and one stop, were extra linemen brought in on that goal line formation?
There was, I believe, extra linemen, but the guy who made the play was Don Davis,
right.
Amazingly.
Well, the way he said it is that, you know, everybody did their job up front. It
right.
freed him up, and he was able to shoot that gap.
That was, I mean, you don't get much bigger than that, because the Patriots were reeling about as bad as you can be reeling before that play.
Also, Patrick Cobbs was released and declined to re-sign to the Steelers practice squad. Any chance he comes back to the Patriots? Did you hear that? I didn't
hear
that.
Yeah, you know, that's true. I do not know. That could mean a number of things, or could be another team interested in it. I mean, it's tough to say right now. Patrick Cobbs is not going to play on this team for a long time, because Kevin Falk is one of those guys going to play till he's like 75. Dylan, you know, he looked pretty good in week one, and let's be honest, he got a superstar in 39. He's going to be one of the, I mean, him and Bush, I mean, I know people like to compare those two. You're talking about two superstars for many, many years to come in the NFL.
Patriots actually have a running back superstar in their
Oh,
midst.
This guy's going to be, I mean, you're talking, now listen, we all know the Corey Dillon thing. And the problem I have, even though Dillon looked good against the Bills, I don't mind him putting him in late in the game, you know, that clock-killing Corey Dillon. But when he gets 4 or 5 yards, I just feel Maroney would get 20.
Yeah, I know.
He's that special. I mean, he makes moves with his feet, and he's got that burst where you just say, you got to get this guy on the field. I remember, like, in the second quarter, he had, like, 3 carries, and we all turned to each other and said, why isn't he getting the ball more?
Yeah.
Because every time he got it, it looked like he was about a half inch away from going 80 yards. This guy is going to be a phenomenal football player for this organization for many years.
Mike in Florida says, I wish you could find old decibel levels from Sullivan and compare it to Gillette. While I agree that the fans aren't the best, the stadium is absolutely the worst at keeping sound in and at having fans feel close to the game. When you're a mile away from the field, you feel like there's no use in yelling. When Denver and Seattle built their new stadiums, one of their number one concerns was to amplify crowd noise as much as possible. Gillette seems to be the total opposite. Interesting.
I didn't think you...
I mean, if you look at the sideline and then take the distance of the sideline to the where the... It's not a lot of room.
No, I didn't feel like you were that far away. I mean, when I went down there for the employees' night for practice, I felt like I was right on top of the field. Like, you could almost reach out and touch the guy. So I really... And I don't go to all the games, so I can't... I'm not an expert on this, but I just personally didn't feel... And you would have to... I would have to go to Denver.
Well, you go to all the games, but you're in the press box.
Right. But I mean, let's be honest. Patriot fans have never been put in the same with Denver. And listen, you go to Denver and Kansas City. Just go to a road game sometime in one of those two places. Then you'll see what me and Fred are talking about.
Right.
You go to Kansas City, they don't sit down.
Right.
They don't sit down all game. They got chants. They're screaming and yelling nonstop. They're nuts. I mean, they're absolutely crazy.
It's like all these people that, you know, oh, Fenway Park's such a quaint little ballpark. Go over to Baltimore.
Yeah.
Check out Camden Yard, and then think about how bad. You'll realize how ridiculous Fenway Park is.
Right.
You know, the ownership's done a great job at doing everything they can over there. But, you know, go to some of these other new parks like Chicago for the White Sox or Camden Yards, and then come back and look at Fenway. Same thing with the fans. If all you know or what you've heard, even at the old Foxborough Stadium, don't talk to me, as Adam Vinatieri said. You got to go check out Kansas City and Denver and
talk
Washington
to me.
And, you know, to some respects, Giants Stadium,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they're loud.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just that we're not trying to make people feel bad. We're just telling you, we go on the road, we hear these people. I mean, it's so loud sometimes the windows are shaking. That's
right.
The difference.
Right. Let's see. Mike says, first off, not sure why Tom is so hated by the fans. Personally, has quickly become one of my favorites.
Oh, thank you.
Tom may go off the deep end with some of his statements, but he has been very entertaining and knowledgeable. Being in the Midwest, I have not seen the game, so I have a few questions. How did the youngsters in the secondary play, Hobbs and Sanders, and did Wilford continue to show his dominance that he showed at the end of last year and in the preseason?
Yeah, well, I thought any time, and I made this comment during the game, I said, I have no idea why the Bills are trying to run the ball up the middle, because every time McGahee went up the middle, he got about a yard at best. Their success is when he kind of went off tackle and to the outside is where they had some running room. Up the middle, they had nothing. Wilfork's just dominating now. I think he's going to become one of the top nose tackles. I mean, I know there's only a few, but Casey Hampton's is kind of like the in vogue nose
right.
tackle. I think he's going to be in that class at the end of the season. I didn't see a lot of Sanders, but I thought the secondary, like you said, they played well, but we'll have to see it against a better passing team before
right.
we can
right.
make
before we know. Also, while I think the Patriots will win this weekend, I think the final score will have a lot of people ready to jump off a bridge. Right now, the Patriots have probably the most question marks as a team than they've had in years. We're playing against Mangini, who should arguably be the most prepared to go up against us. Offensively, if the Jets can stop the run, things could become a real struggle. I really think that this week Brady may have to put together one of his best games. I won't fall into the same trap I fell into with Buffalo.
Well, and he hit on something important there, and that's, I think, the key matchup of the game, is the Jets have a good front seven. They got good linebackers, and if they stuff that Patriots run, do they have enough weapons for Brady to go to the air and make a difference? So to me, that's where the matchup is, right there, right in the trenches.
Well, assuming, and this could be a big assumption, that the offensive line does better in protection, I can't believe Brady having two games like that in a row.
He usually doesn't.
Right.
I mean, it would have to be, like you said, where he's just getting killed and
right.
he has to get rid of the ball.
So look for Brady 250 plus in yardage at least, if
mm-hmm.
not a
'cause I don't think they'll have quite as much success on the ground against the Jets as they did against the Bills.
And it's just like Belichick to have a completely different offensive game plan from one game to another.
Listen, he knows Mangini knows a bit about this.
He knows
right.
that it's one of those things.
There's going to be a few wrinkles in there this week. You can bet on that.
Isaac says he hasn't written in over a year, but wanted to weigh in on the Branch situation. It took me a few days to deal with the emotional loss and develop an opinion. I'm genuinely saddened by Deion's departure. He was one of my favorite Patriots. My resolution comes from the realization that neither side is to blame here. In fact, both sides did what was best for them. D Dion will now be paid something in the order of $8 million more over the next 6 years than he would have if he hadn't started all this. He gave up the opportunity to build a legacy as a Patriot, and he abandoned his teammates. But that is a lot of money, and I have a hard time blaming him for the decision. As for the Patriots, I don't believe they would have franchise-tagged him. Why would they have paid him $9 million a year when they weren't willing to go over $6 million? Therefore, they were faced with a choice of perhaps 6 games of Dion this year versus a first-round pick, which gives you 5 years of service. Clearly, they took the better of two options. It's an unfortunate result, but in hindsight, perhaps this was the only logical outcome given the circumstances. Of course, I'll be rooting against Dion in Seattle this year, but I won't have animosity toward him.
That's fine. That's what I think you should do.
Sure. By the way, Tom made a significant error during the Tuesday show saying that a high first-round pick is similar to a low second. With the new contract rules, a first gives the team an additional year of service from a prime of a player's career. This difference should not be overlooked.
No, I meant more in talent-wise was what I was talking about. I'm saying it's, you know, you're getting the same kind of player in that area. I didn't mean like contract-wise and money-wise and all that. I just said, you know, for Seattle, if they do what they want to do, you know, they're not, it's basically, say the Jets are one of the three worst teams in football and Seattle's one of the three best, you know, you're going to ship them off to Seattle, you're going to take that pick, and you're not going to trade them within your division, and Seattle doesn't really mind giving that pick up.
I'll leave you with a question that puts things in perspective. Which players on the current roster would you, thinking as a GM, prefer to have for only this season versus a first-round pick? So which player would you prefer to have there's quite a few, I think.
On this roster?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's a ton.
Yeah, way too many to...
Yeah. I don't know. What's the point there?
I don't know. There's just a lot of... I can't really think of too many. There's a lot of good players on this
team. You have to go to the bathroom?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's take a break, Gary. We'll be right back.
Bank of America would like to take a moment to let you hear what our home equity line of credit sounds like. You see, if you want to remodel the kitchen...
It smells great, hon.
...or renovate the bathroom...
Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh...
...or fix up anything around the house, Bank of America's home equity line of credit is the easy, low-cost way to make it all happen. There's no paperwork to bring, so applying is simple. And you'll have access to your money just about everywhere, by phone, online, and at our banking centers nationwide. All of which makes putting that pool in the backyard... A little less of a dream and a little more of a reality. So whether you want to have the pros handle it or do it yourself, a Bank of America home equity line of credit is your ticket. Apply today. Just visit bankofamerica.com, call 1-800-900-9000, or stop by your neighborhood banking center.
Clementine.
Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Bank of America. Higher standards. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
The New England Patriots won an amazing 3 Super Bowl championships in 4 years. Relive these defining moments in Patriots history with a limited edition print featuring action photos and images of the 3 championship banners that now hang at Gillette Stadium. And if you think that's good,
it is good.
How about having it signed by perennial Pro Bowler Richard Seymour?
It's going to be shot, Richard Seymour.
This autograph print exclusively from the New England Patriots is perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on the Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points card and free 3 championship banner print signed by Richard Seymour. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autograph print limited to the first 300 with qualifying purchase. Visit PatriotsExtraPoints.com for details.
Pepsi Smash!
Pepsi Smash gets you closer to your favorite artists every day. Together with Yahoo Music, Pepsi Smash is online in a big way at PepsiSmash.com. It's unexpected, it's personal, and it's all made possible by Pepsi.
Hey, what's up? It's Ben from Breaking Benjamin. Check out our latest single, The Diary of Jane. That was The Diary of Jane from our latest record, Phobia.
To find other hot performances and go behind the scenes with your favorite artists, log on to PepsiSmash.com. It's what's happening in music.
Pepsi Smash. It's music in a way you won't find anywhere else. Get behind the cameras. See exclusive performances and features like a day in the life, interviews, headlines, and contests. Log on to be a part of the Pepsi Smash and Yahoo Music experience. PepsiSmash.com. It's what's happening in music.
Pepsi Smash. Pepsi Smash!
Pepsi Smash gets you closer to your favorite artists every day. Together with Yahoo Music, Pepsi Smash is online in a big way at PepsiSmash.com. It's unexpected, it's personal, and it's all made possible by Pepsi.
Hey, what's up? It's Ben from Breaking Benjamin. Check out our latest single, The Diary of Jane. That was The Diary of Jane from our latest record, Phobia. To find other hot performances and go behind the scenes with your favorite artists, log on to PepsiSmash.com. It's what's happening in music.
Pepsi Smash. It's music in a way you won't find anywhere else. Get behind the cameras. See exclusive performances and features like a day in the life, interviews, headlines, and contests. Log on to be a part of the Pepsi Smash and Yahoo Music experience. PepsiSmash.com. It's what's happening in music.
Pepsi Smash.
Back here at PSW in Progress, we've got a few more minutes. Let's get to some more emails here at webradio@patriots.com. Phil from Austin, I like Dion and I wish him well. Having said that, I'd like to jump on top of the Dion dog pile, so here goes. He was a 65th pick in the 2002 draft. Most years he would have been a third-round pick, not a second-round one. He wasn't really the MVP of Super Bowl 39. Rodney Harrison was. Lawrence Maroney will do more to make Tom Brady's life easier than any wideout could ever do. And one of the few places with worse weather than Boston is Seattle. He won't need to spend any of his bonus money on sunglasses. That's true. They get a lot of rain out in Seattle.
Yeah, he played pretty good in that Super Bowl.
Yeah, and he also played good in the Carolina Super Bowl as well. No, think about it. At this time in his career, he's only like, I think 18 catches behind Jerry Rice for the all-time receiver. I think so.
That's pretty good.
He's really done well in those big games, you know. So I'm not going to.
And I think that's one of those where when you get in a big game, Brady goes to his favorite receiver more because it's such a big game, and that happened to be Branch in those games.
Let's see. Sean says, Tom Casale, I was really wrong about you. You really bring fresh knowledge to the team. Keep up the great work. Do you guys feel, as Sean Salisbury's stake, and Eric, I'm glad you have a TV gig, Alan, think, we have very poor skill position players?
Well, first of all, if Sean Salisbury said it, then I disagree with it, because he's never said anything that's been right. What are you talking about? Isn't Tom Brady a skill position player?
Right.
Isn't Lawrence Maroney a skill position
Watson.
Player? Watson.
I mean, even Corey Dillon.
Listen, let's be honest. The receiver position is not the best in the NFL right now. That's just the way it is. But to say all the skill position players are no good, that's another guy.
Falk as a third down back over just about anyone.
Kevin Falk out of the backfield, this team still has weapons. It's just another one of the national media guys that doesn't really understand the team. Knee-jerk reaction, that's all it is.
Let's see. Dave from Coventry says he heard this morning that Miami picked up Patrick Cobbs to their practice squad.
Oh, okay. Like I said, Miami will pick up anybody. If you're out there, Nick Saban wants you.
Jeff from Hawaii again says, no, Tom, I wasn't the one who told you to F off.
Oh, okay.
we argued about whiny fans and income discrepancies between the rich and everyone else. One more question. Another thing I thought was overlooked. Does Matt Light stink as bad as it seems? When Graham, which is his crutch, leaves via free agency, is Matt moving inside to guard? Shouldn't we think about a true left tackle next draft as much as a wide out and linebacker?
Well, that's interesting because, being here for only a year, the offensive line is probably what I knew the least about. And Andy is really down on Matt Light, doesn't think he's adequate at best.
Yeah, he had a little bit of trouble on
him. And Schoble's a good, let's be honest, Schoble's a good player.
And he's a speed rusher and has always given Light trouble.
And those kind of guys give Light trouble and usually have to keep a guy in. So hopefully he'll get better this week. He doesn't have Abraham to worry about. So
Yeah.
You know, as far from what you got to remember, I came during the Pittsburgh game. That's when he got hurt.
Right.
So if I'm going based on one game, yeah, I'm on Andy's boat. He's adequate. So I'll have to wait and see him a little bit more.
Dave's from Winnipeg. He said he just saw the game versus Buffalo. I had only heard about it. I expected the worst based on what I was hearing. I didn't think the game was that bad. Add Bruschi, Gabriel, Jackson, Harrison will improve each week, as well as the entire team. I'm not worried.
Well, I wouldn't be worried, but it was bad, and I think Fred, even you'll admit, that's about as poorly as you can play and win. Don't you agree?
Oh,
you
can't play, half, no doubt about
you
it.
You can't play much worse than that and come out with a win. So, lucky win, great, 1-0, let's get better week two.
Okay, Vern in Newville, Pennsylvania. Can't listen in live, so I thought I'd send this one in and listen later. Do you think it would make more sense to have Willie Andrews back there with Falk on kick returns rather than Maroney? Why risk an injury on returns with Maroney when Andrews looked great on returns when given the chance in preseason? Let Andrews prove he can't do it before putting Maroney back there.
Well, my guess is that Andrews proved he can't do it, or he'd be there.
Right. Now, he had a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, he did have a little trouble, and I expected Maroney to start the season back there now.
I mean, you know, we make fun of Belichick that he never gives us any information, but he said a couple times in the training camp, usually you want guys who normally handle the ball
right
back there, which
right
means wide receivers and running backs.
Right. And know? Now say Dylan gets hurt, and they really have to depend on Maroney to carry the load at running back. Then maybe they make a switch. But I'm not surprised that he's back there. He did some in college. Plus, we've seen his explosiveness, and that's an area where they really need to improve. They were bad at returns last year, and they need to get some big plays out of that.
And I think that is a factor of the game that I think Belichick was pleased with a little bit on how they performed in special teams, because in his mind they were going up against one of the
right
best special teams clubs in the NFL, and you know they had that one long return up to about the
44 yarder.
But I think that overall he was pleased with how they performed on special teams.
Yeah, they played well.
Vern also says, do you think Ron Borges reads the Globe? I hope so, because then he would see what an unbiased and thoughtful piece of reporting looks like when he reads the Bob Ryan take on the Patriot Branch debacle. Borges is a talented reporter, but I'm afraid his personal disdain for Belichick makes his credibility extremely suspect when it comes to reporting on the Pats.
That's a fair assessment.
I think so. All right, coming up is John Rook. And John, are you on the phone?
Nope, I'm right here with you, Freddie.
Oh, okay. By the miracle of ISDN technology, John is here. John, how you doing? How was your off season?
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. It was a little bit long, though, I have to admit. You know, so
well,
I realized
after your team wins a national championship in football,
yep,
you know,
right,
every day's a party, right?
Very much so.
Except
for last Saturday.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for that. Appreciate it. You know, I'm not used to this because, you know, I realize you guys are all big time and you all have your own media, you know, things that you've got to toot your horn. But I mean, I missed you in the studio yesterday. Where were you?
Well, you know, we do the rotation, but, you know, I have.
Oh, so see, now that we're into the season and you got to go every day, you
right
guys are into a rotation.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
well, you know, whether I'm there physically or in my studio, which I'm actually located physically now, at least I'm here, you know, every day. So,
absolutely. So, John's going to be with us again this year with Patriots Playbook. And
yep,
John, you know, I didn't get to talk to you yesterday. Quickly, you know, before your show starts at 2:00. What was your take on everything that went down with Deion Branch?
You know, I mean, I'm real happy that they got a number one. We talked briefly about this, I think. We talked about Deion yesterday, didn't we, Tom?
Yeah, a little bit.
I thought so.
Just a little bit.
You know, I'm real happy with the one. The more that I look at it, the more I'm amazed that they got a one out of it. So I think that being said, like any other fan, I'm sorry that Deion's gone, but I think I realized a few weeks ago that Deion was not going to play for this team this year. There was no way that he was going to come back in Week 10. There was no way that that was going to be held over the Patriots' heads for more than half of the regular season before, you know, they would either allow him to come back or sit him on the bench or whatever. They were going to get something out of this as long as they could get something out of it, and the Patriots maximized the opportunity, which is what they have always done. You can agree or disagree with the entire thought process of, well, they should have paid Deion what he was worth, or you could say, well, Deion obviously had a contract and he should have played for it. Whichever way you go, the Patriots took what it was. As we all know, Bill does from time to time. It is what it is. He took it. He made the most out of it. You know, this team, the organization, is quickly showing me, in fact, they probably showed me this for the last two or three years,
yep,
that they are an organization that makes chicken salad out of chicken bleep,
yep,
as well as anybody ever has.
Well, okay. And one other question I have from you, because you're such a multimedia guy, you're all over the place. What's your opinion of the new NFL in America show on NBC on Sunday night that goes up, you know, before the actual game, their new version of primetime?
It's going to take a little for me to get used to. I mean, you know, when I remember way back in the olden days when ESPN first did NFL, you know, and,
right,
and you had to get used to primetime a little bit, and you know, in all the Bermanisms that were there, and now it's kind of like, well, geez, what are we going to do without it?
Right, right.
You know, so, you know, I'm going to reserve judgment until I've seen it for,
Brady,
you know,
feeling
maybe
like Big Pappy.
Yeah, for half a season, Fred, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I'll give it half a season. My initial inclination is.
The problem with it, though, is they're dividing up their audience because people either love Chris Collinsworth or they hate him.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
I think actually
I like Bettis.
He's not bad.
Well, Bettis is glib as a football player goes, but Bettis has I kept waiting for more from him. I wanted some more insight.
I wanted what was going on.
I wanted the X's and the O's from him. I actually think Collinsworth has gotten better.
See, I like Collinsworth, but, like, my wife hates him.
Some people just can't stand him.
You know why? Because he looks like the proverbial pencil-neck geek.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, I think people realize that, you know, he's a pretty good receiver.
Yeah.
You know, if you go back that far, he's a pretty good receiver.
I don't think this had anything to do with that pencil-neck geek Lowe.
Yeah. Ooh, see? Yeah. Now, Brian Lowe was in here yesterday, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think he's gotten better, and I've kind of, you know, learned to adapt my taste toward what he's saying. I want more from Jerome Bettis, and I hope they give him an opportunity to expand his role other than overstating the obvious. I think Sharp needs to shut up just like his brother.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think I liked how Bettis didn't go back on his Cowher's going to retire at the end of the season, even though Cowher, you know, kind of fired back at him, because most players kind of just tuck their tail and run in that situation, and he stuck to his guns. And like you said, hopefully he'll get an expanded role as the weeks go on, and Sharp won't.
Well, I really wanted some deep scoop, you know, on Pittsburgh and the likes like that. And unless I missed it, I was disappointed. But like I said, I'm going to give him a few weeks to kind of grow into the role and see, because I think he can make, you know, a decent ex-jock turned, you know, television reporter type person.
Well, the Patriots have a September 24th, they'll be the NBC game.
That's right. Yeah, the Denver game, the next home game, right.
So, all right, John, good luck today, and glad to have you back for another season of Patriots.com Radio.
Always glad to be here, Freddie.
All right, as far as PFW in progress goes, that'll be it for me and Tom. We'll be back tomorrow at 2 o'clock, at noon. I don't know who's doing it, but we'll be back.